Part 6, Around the World. Province of Bohemia, the European Union. It is called Kost, the bone, and what it lacks in beauty it more than makes up for in strength. Appearing to grow out of its solid rock foundation, this 14th century Gothic Hrad casts an intimidating shadow over the Balkanic Valley, an image David Allen Forbes is keen to capture with his pencil and paper. This will be his second book, Castles of the Zombie War, The Continent. The Englishman sits under a tree, his patchwork clothing and long Scottish sword already adding to this Arthurian setting. He abruptly switches gears as I arrive, from serene artist to painfully nervous storyteller.
When I say that the New World doesn't have our history of fixed fortification, I'm only referring to North America. There are the Spanish coastal fortresses, naturally, along the Caribbean, and the ones we and the French built in the Lesser Antilles. Then there are the Inca ruins in the Andes, although they never experienced direct sieges. Also, when I say North America, that does not include the Mayan Aztec ruins in Mexico. That business with the Battle of Kukulcan, although I suppose that's Toltec now, isn't it? When those chaps held off so many Z-heads on the steps of that bloody Great Pyramid. So when I say New World, I'm really referring to the United States and Canada. This isn't an insult, you understand. Please don't take it as such. You're both young countries. You don't have the history of institutional anarchy we Europeans suffered after the fall of Rome. You've always had standing national governments with the forces capable of enforcing law and order. I know that wasn't true during your westward expansion or your civil war. And please, I'm not discounting those pre-Civil War fortresses or the experiences of those defending them. I'd one day like to visit Fort Jefferson. I hear those who survived there had quite a time of it. All I'm saying is, in Europe's history, we had almost a millennia of living under institutional anarchy, where sometimes the concept of physical safety stopped at the battlements of your lord's castle. Does that make sense? I'm not making sense. Can we start again?
No, this is fine. Please continue.
You'll edit out all of the daft bits.
You got it.
Right then. Castles. Well, I don't want for a moment to overstate their importance for the general war effort. In fact, when you compare them to any other type of fixed fortification, modern, modified, and so forth, their contribution does seem quite negligible. Unless you're like me and that contribution was what saved your life. This doesn't mean that a mighty fortress was naturally our god. For starters, you must understand the inherent difference between a castle and a palace. A lot of so-called castles were really nothing more than just great, impressive homes, or else had been converted to such after their defensive value had become obsolete. Just look at Versailles. That was a first-rate cock-up. Small wonder the French government chose to build their national memorial on its ashes. Did you ever read that poem by Renard about the wild roses that now grow in the memorial garden, their petals stained red with the blood of the damned? Yes, there were cock-ups aplenty. But there were also some noteworthy triumphs. Many were subjected to only short-term sieges, the good fortune of being on the right side of the line. Some in Spain, Bavaria or Scotland, above the Antonine, only had to hold out for a few weeks, or even days. For some, like Kissimul, it was only a question of getting through one rather dodgy night. Then there were the true tales of victory, like the Chenonceau in France, a bizarre little Disney-esque castle built on a bridge over the Cher River. With both connections to land severed and the right amount of strategic forethought, they managed to hold their position for years.
They had enough supplies for years?
Oh, good Lord, no. They simply waited for first snowfall, then raided the surrounding countryside. This was, I should imagine, standard procedure for almost anyone under siege, castle or not. I'm sure those in your strategic blue zones, at least those above the snow line, operated in much the same manner. In that way, we were fortunate that most of Europe freezes in winter. Many of the defenders I've spoken to have agreed that the inevitable onset of winter, long and brutal as it was, became a life-saving reprieve. As long as they didn't freeze to death, many survivors took the opportunity of frozen Z-heads to raid the surrounding countryside for everything they'd need for the warmer months.
Windsor was your castle.
Well, not mine, personally.
I mean, you were there.
It was, from a defensive standpoint, as close as one could come to perfection. Before the war, it was the largest inhabited castle in Europe, almost 13 acres. It had its own well for water and enough storage space to hold a decade's worth of rations. The fire of 1992 led to the state-of-the-art suppression system, and the subsequent terrorist threats upgraded security measures to rival any in the UK. Not even the general public knew what their tax dollars were paying for. Bulletproof glass, reinforced walls, retractable bars, and steel shutters hidden so cleverly in the windowsills and doorframes. But of all of our achievements at Windsor, nothing can rival the siphoning of crude oil and natural gas from the deposit several kilometers beneath the castle's foundation. It had been discovered in the 1990s, but never exploited for a variety of political and environmental reasons. You can believe we exploited it, though. Our contingent of Royal Engineers rigged a scaffolding up and over our wall and extended it to the drilling site. It was quite an achievement. And you can see how it became the precursor to our fortified motorways. On a personal level, I was just grateful for warm rooms, hot food, and, in a pinch, the Molotovs and flaming ditch. It's not the most efficient way to stop a Z-head, I know, but as long as you've got them stuck and can keep them in the fire. And besides, what else could we do when the bullets ran out and we were left with nothing else but an odd lot of medieval hand weapons? There were quite a bit of those about, in museums, personal collections, and not a decorative dud among them. These were real, tough and tested. They became part of British life again, ordinary citizens traipsing about with a mace or a halberd or double-bladed battle axe. I myself became rather adept with this claymore. Although you wouldn't think of it to look at me.
He gestures, slightly embarrassed, to the weapon almost as long as himself.
It's not really ideal. It takes a lot of skill, but eventually you learn what you can do, what you never thought you were capable of, what others around you are capable of.
Forbes hesitates before speaking. He is clearly uncomfortable. I hold out my hand. Thank you so much for taking the time.
There's more.
If you're not comfortable...
No, please, it's quite all right.
Forbes takes a breath.
She wouldn't leave, you see. She insisted, over the objections of Parliament, of the Prime Minister, of her own family, to remain at Windsor. As she put it, for the duration. I thought maybe it was misguided nobility or maybe fear-based paralysis. I tried to make her see reason, begged her almost on my knees. Hadn't she done enough with the Balmoral Decree? Turning all her estates into protected zones for anyone who could reach and defend them. Why not join her family in Ireland or the Isle of Man? Or at least, if she was insisting on remaining in Britain, Supreme Command Headquarters north of the Antonine.
What did she say?
The highest of distinctions is service to others. Her father had said that. It was the reason he had refused to run to Canada during the Second World War. The reason her mother had spent the Blitz visiting civilians huddled in the tube stations beneath London. The same reason to this day we remain a united kingdom. They were viewed very much like castles, I suppose, as crumbling, obsolete relics with no real modern function other than as tourist attractions. But when the skies darkened and the nation called, both reawoke to the meaning of their existence. One shielded our bodies, the other our souls.